so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Bacheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. Welcome back, everybody, to the last episode in this series, Stories of Sorrow, Lessons of Hope. In this episode, we're going to be exploring a story from the end of Maseches Makos. And this story takes place not prior or during the destruction, but actually post-destruction. And we're going to see Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues walking and observing the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And each of them are going to have a different reaction to what they're seeing. We're going to be looking at this story, and we wanted to end off with this because we felt like this story really has a message of hope and of looking forward to the future of what all of this destruction is going to bring for us. So let's dive in, Mishki. I'm excited.
Hi, Hadassah. Thank you. So yes, this story is a little different. It's not in the same sugya as the other two in Gittin. This is at the end of Makos, as you said. But it really completes the themes that we've been discussing. We spoke about going into Galus and how we can be in Galus with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, then the punishment of the Rishayim who bring us there, even though it's all from Hashem. And this third story will really bring us to discussing Geula and the hope for Geula, and how the Chorban, how destruction really paves the path for Geula. And really, as we're right before Tisha B'Av, this is a very apropos lesson for now. So this story is a pretty famous story. Many people may be familiar with it. The story of Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues walking, where his colleagues were crying when they saw different parts of the Chorban. And Rabbi Akiva was laughing, and he explains why he's laughing. And at the end, his colleagues are comforted. So, like I said, pretty famous. However, there are different perspectives that we're going to be bringing in the story. I think, again, to show us how deep Agadais really are. And we've been getting this through going through the specific stories of the Chorban, specific Agadais of the Chorban. Throughout these different episodes, we've been getting a greater understanding for how Agadais are viewed in general. And really, I think that this story will really show us how Agada can be, it's almost like a prism, right? Like a small piece of glass, but it refracts a whole rainbow. That there's, you know, just a few paragraphs of discussion inside of the Gemara, but there are so many different ways to understand the Gemara and different lessons that it could take, that we can take for our lives, how the words hold so much. So here we'll dive into the story again. We'll read and translate, and then we'll discuss a few different perspectives on the story from different interpreters, and we'll talk a little bit about why they interpreted the way that they did, and their goals and their interpretations. So inside Maseches Makos Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. Ukvar haya Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, Mahalchen Badarach, Vishamu Kol Hamina Shel Raimi Miplata. I think that's how you say it. So, Rabban Gamliel, Rabban Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva. So four Tanaim were walking on the way, and they heard the great tumult coming from Rome, specifically from the city of Patlai. I don't know how to pronounce it. Berichok Me'ev Esra Mil. So it was 120 mil away, but the noise from the city was very, very loud. So Vitrilu Baichen. So they started crying. Rabbi Kiva Misachik and Rabbi Kiva started laughing. So they both had an emotional reaction. The three Chachamim started crying. Rabbi Kiva started laughing. So Amar Lai, they said to him, Mipnei Mata Masachik, why are you laughing? So Amar Lahem, right? A Jew answers a Jew with a question. Amar Lahem, he said to them, Ma'atam Mipnei Ma'atam Baichem, and why are you guys crying? So they said, Amar Lai, Halalu Kushim, Shemishtachavim Latzavim, Makatram Lavaras Kechavim, Yeshvim Betach, Lahashkit, Va'anu Besedam Ragleinu, Ragli Elakinu Sarah Beish. So they said, what do you mean? these Gayim who bow down to false idols and they burn incense to idols and they are having such a wonderful time, they're living such a wonderful life, and we just had the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so that our Beis HaMikdash was just destroyed. How could we not cry? Right? So very, very logical statement over there. We shouldn't cry. Amar Lahan, he said to them, Rabbi Kiva said to them, that is exactly why I'm laughing. If this is the way that Hashem treats the people who go against Hashem, the Romans were very vile, obviously went against Hashem. They were the ones chosen as the messengers to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Al achas kama v'kama. So how much more so is Hashem going to give us? So while the other Chachamim, they were sad because they saw the prosperity of the Romans and how, and the Romans were so, so bad. Rabbi Kiva said it's specifically their prosperity that should be the reason for our rejoicing, because the good that they have, how much more so will our good be, because we really are following Hashem. That's story number one. Story number two, Agada number two, Shuv Pam Achas Hayu Aylan Yerushalayim. So another time they were going up to Yerushalayim, Kevan Shegiyu LaHaratzayfim, when they got to Haratzayfim, or Mount Scopus, Karu Bigdam, they tore their clothing, because, and this is really what you should be doing, right? As when you come to Yerushalayim and you see its destruction, halachically, you should be tearing your clothing. Kevan Shegiyu LaHaravayis, but once they got to Haravayis, the temple mount, what did they see? So they saw a fox that was coming directly out of the place of the Kadesh HaKadashim. So they started crying. Rabbi Kiva Mitzachik, so same thing. Rabbi Kiva started laughing. Amrulai, they said to him, why are you laughing? Amrulahem, he said to them, why are you crying? Amrulai, so they said to him, of course we're crying. Makam shakasav bai vazar hakar of yuma. So the place that it says about it that a stranger who comes close should die, and now shu'alim halchu bai, foxes are going on it, v'lay nibcha, and we shouldn't cry. This is the place where only the Kayin Gadol is allowed to come, and only on Yom Kippur. And here you have random foxes, stray foxes just coming and going. This really shows how bad the Horban is. So Amar Lahen, he said, Rabbi Kiva said to them, that's precisely the reason for which I'm crying. Why I'm laughing. Lekachani mitzachik, therefore I am laughing. Dichsiv, as it says in Yeshayahu, Va'ita li edim ne'manim es uri ha'kayin ve'es zechare ben yivarchei'at. So the Rabbi Kiva says, because it says in Yeshaya that I have Uriah, the Navi Uriah, and Zechariah are my witnesses. V'chima inyan Uriah itzel Zechariah. So why do we discuss Uriah and Zechariah together? B'mikdash Uriah b'mikdash Rishon. Uriah was in the first place of Mikdash, v'Zechariah b'mikdash Sheni, and as Zechariah was with the second base of Mikdash. Ella telakasim nivuasei shel Zechariah b'nivuasei shel Uriah, because the pasuk puts the nivuos of Uriah and Zechariah together. So what Rabbi Kiva is saying over here is he says I'm going to use a proof text from the Navi, which tells us that when Uriah's nivuah comes true, then Zechariah's nevuah will come true as well. So what were those nevuahs? The Gemara continues. Uriah says in the Navi Micha, that's where it's written, L'chein biglalchem tzion sada ticharesh, because of you, tzion will be plowed like a field. B'Zechariah k'siv, and in Zechariah it says, Ad yeshvu zekenim v'skenais berchavis Yerushalayim, that there will be a time when old men and old women will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. So until Uriah's nevuah never happened, I didn't know if Zechariah's would happen. But now, we see that Uriah's nevuah came true. That we see that Yerushalayim really, this is a field that there are foxes going on the base of the place of the Kadesh HaKadashim. It definitely is a plowed field. Biadua, I know for certain, shenivuase shel Zecharia miskayemes. That the nevuah of Zecharia, that ayyish v'zkeni v'zkenes berchaves Yerushalayim, that there will be a time when it will be beautiful in Yerushalayim, and old men and women will sit in Yerushalayim, and it will be a time of prosperity and enjoyment. I know that it will happen now because the first one happened. So, Belashan Hazah Amrulai. So the three other Tanaim looked at Rabbi Akiva and said, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu. Akiva, you have comforted us. Akiva, you have comforted us. So that's the story, right? Plainly, what was happening is that the Chachamim looked at what was going on and said, this is an indication of how bad the Galus is. And Rabbi Akiva looked in it and said, you know, that's actually precisely the reason why I'm so happy. That is what's telling me about the Geula. So this story is really, really commented on a lot, because it talks about Galus and Geula and how the worst times can really bring us the most comfort. But we're gonna speak about just a few interpretations of the story. So there's a few questions that are a little like bothersome that different chachamim discuss, right? Why specifically are these the things that make the Tanaim cry? Like, what's the significance in the conversation? What's going on over here? And why was what Rabbi Akiva said comforting to them? That's really what they discuss. And then they also discuss the nevuah of Uriah and the nevuah of Zecharia. So we'll start with the Maharsha. So we've discussed the Maharsha before. The Maharsha lived in 16th century Poland. He wrote the Chidushe Agadais and Chidushe Halachais. They are two separate... originally, they were written as two separate svarim on the Gemara. So anything that was halacha in Gemara was commented on, he commented in his Chidush Halachas, and anything that was Agadais, he commented in Chidush Agadais. Actually, after he wrote both of them, he comments that he really wishes that he put it all together, because halacha and Agada is really, really all one and the same. They all come from the Chachamim, and they all teach very, very deep lessons. But his goal, the Maharsha's goal in explaining the entire Gemara, is really to explain Pshat of Gemara. What is the story telling us? What is the conversation that's happening? And you see that in the Maharsha's interpretation of this story. And really, we're really only going to discuss his interpretation of the second one, about the fox going in the place of the Beis HaMikdash. So he looks at the story and he says, really, the psukim from Uriah and Zecharia, the nevuos of Uriah and Zecharia, that's really the way to frame the entire story. Why were they crying? Why specifically did the fox make them cry? It says that they walked up to Har Sifim and they saw the destruction and they ripped their clothing. They were sad, obviously. They saw Khorban, but it was specifically the fox that made them cry. What was so harsh about the fox? So he says it's because of how low the fox is an indication of how low the Kodesh HaKodeshim fell. And it was that that poignant, like, emotional pain that made them cry. Where they said, if they saw people enjoying the field that Yerushalayim was plowed into, it wouldn't be as bad. But when they see an animal, and specifically a fox, which is always considered like a sly, very low down animal, when they saw that, that's what brought out how low the destruction was. So simply explaining why they cried. Now Rabbi Akiva answers, and he says that no, it's actually specifically the fact that a fox is there that makes this a reason for some sort of celebration, a reason for laughing. He says, because in Gemara Anida, it says that a fox doesn't take from fields. It really is just itself. It doesn't take from anything. And it discusses different parts of the fox and sly and whatever. And he says that the fact that a fox is there shows us, is telling us, that nothing will ever enjoy get pleasure from the place of the Kodesh HaKodeshim until the time of Zechariah, until the time that the Yidden will be able to reap pleasure from the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So you're sad that, you know, no one is getting pleasure, no one's getting Nachas Ruach from the place of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and the lowest of animals is there. Actually, the fact that no one is getting pleasure from such a holy place is such a wonderful, beautiful thing, at that it will remain this way until we're zeicha to have Yerushalayim, that no one is going to be using our place of holiness. Our place of holiness is just going to be wild. They're just going to be foxing over there until we're ready for it. And that's why Rabbi Kiva specifically brings the nebuah of Zechariah, which talks about the Yidden reaping pleasure specifically from the place of Yerushalayim. Because the question about these two nevuahs is, what do these nevuahs have to do with each other? The Gemara really asks this question. Uriah was a Navi of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Zechariah is the Navi of the destruction and rebuilding of the second Beis destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash and rebuilding the third. Why is one dependent on the other? And the Marsha here is saying is because Uriah talks about how nothing will get pleasure from the place of the Beis HaMikdash until the time that the Yidden will get pleasure from the place of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's a simple shot way of understanding the conversation. Why the fox specifically made them so sad, and why Rabbi Akiva says, no, the fox is the reason why you should be happy.
So just to clarify, in Rabbi Akiva's understanding, the significance of the fox is that a fox is an animal that doesn't take anything. So if you see a fox there and nothing else there, that implies that nobody, not even including the fox, is actually getting any pleasure from that place, which is a reason for comfort because it's almost waiting for us to come back. Is that the idea?
Exactly. Nice. That's exactly what it is. The Maharal, as again, we've also discussed the Maharal, he looked at the pshat of the Agadis and explains the pshat, again, not as something that necessarily physical, corporeally, that's how you say it, corporeally happened, but it happened on a very, on a chachma type way, in an essential way. So the Maharal comments not very long on this story, but he says that when it talks about how the Chachamim heard the noise from a distance of 120 mil, so here he's talking about the first story, he says it's not that they actually necessarily heard it, it's impossible to hear from such a long distance, but what they heard is they heard it in their minds, they heard it very, very strongly in their minds, because as they were coming closer, and we know from Chumash, that coming closer to a place and approaching it by a distance of 3 days, that already brings the excitement closer. As they were coming closer, they knew what was going on in Rome, in this Roman city, and they heard the sound very, very, the tumult in their minds, and that sound in their minds all made them cry. So he comments on that. And then with the second story, he says that the reason why the fox made them so sad was because, again, like we said, like similar to how the Maharsha says it, because the fox symbolizes how low the Churban went, that the Beis HaMikdash could have been destroyed without Hashem having to put a fox in the Beis HaMikdash, in the place of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. However, the Maharal says that the greater the void, right, and this is a philosophical concept, the greater the void, the greater, the more space there is for it to be filled. So the worse the Churban it is, the greater the Geula will be. And that's what Rabbi Kiva was saying in story number two, is that the fact that it looks so bad is the most wonderful thing for us, because that means that there's so much more space for Geula to happen.
Right, that's a really beautiful imagery. Like the bigger the hole, the bigger the gap, the more there is to fill. Nice.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So again, that's the Maharsha looking at the story in a pshat way, but in a philosophical pshat way, and talking about it conceptually. Now, the Chassam Sofer. So we haven't discussed the Chassam Sofer at all. He lived in the 18th to 19th centuries, and he in Europe. And he is most known he's known for many things. He was a very big Talmud Chacham and leader, but he's most known for his fight against reform. He lived in a time when reform was very, very strong in Europe, and he was probably the head of the rabbinic response to reform. So in a drasha before Tisha B'Av, he discusses the story, and he really shows how this story can be leveraged or understood as an attack against the reform movement. He talks about this second story about the fox coming out of the place of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And he says the Chachamim, they also knew about this Nevuah from Uriah and the Nevuah of Zechariah. They knew that when Sion, Kaseh Tiharesh, that when Sion becomes like a field, then there will be Mashiach. But then that makes way for Zechariah's Nevuah to also happen. However, they saw the fox and they said, a fox is actually not the prime example of a sadeh, of a field, of a wild grown place. They said a fox is something that can actually, it's not domesticated, but it could be seen in regular fields. When we envision a wild overgrown field, we're envisioning forest with very wild animals, and that's not what a fox is. A fox is not the ultimate of bad. So they were crying, and this is almost the opposite of what the Marsha and the Maharal say. They were crying because it wasn't so bad yet, right? It's not so bad now. I'm not sure that Zechariah's Nevuah will happen. But Rabbi Akiva was the one to say, no, this really is so bad. Now, why Rabbi Akiva? Why does Rabbi Akiva know that a fox is so bad? So the Chassam Sefer says, because Rabbi Akiva has a different agada about a fox. And this is an agada that appears, it's a mashal that Rabbi Akiva gives and it's written in Masechta in Brachos. And he says a story, also a famous story, a famous mashal that Rabbi Akiva says. So there was someone named Pappas ben Yehuda, and he came to Rabbi Akiva and said, you guys are dying, right? You're not allowed to learn Torah. And the Romans don't let you learn Torah. And this is what you're doing. They're going to kill you. Why don't you just come and be like us? Stop learning Torah. Why are you putting your lives at risk? And Rabbi Akiva gave a mashal. He said, you know, I'll tell you a mashal. Imagine there were many fish inside of the water. There were lots and lots of fish in the water. And a sly fox comes to the fish and says, fish, why are you running back and forth? You look so, you know, you look so perturbed. You're running. Why are you doing that? So the fish said, we're scared. We're scared of the fisherman's net, right? That they could come and get us. So the fox said, I have an idea. Why don't the fishermen aren't trying to get fish on dry land, so why don't you come out to dry land with me and you'll be safe from the fisherman's net? And the fish turned to the fox and says, fox, they call you the most wise of all animals, but really you're teepish, you're very foolish. The water is our place, it's our source of life. If we leave the water, then for sure we're dead. Right? So we may not have fishermen's nets out to get us, but that doesn't really matter because we're not going to be alive anymore. So Rabbi Akiva said, right, in his Nimshal, you're telling us to leave Tyra because Tyra is what might make us die. Well, if we leave Tyra, we're going to be dead already. It is Kihim Chayinu V'Archaminu. It's the source of our life. So Rabbi Akiva knew that a fox isn't like a nice, sweet little animal that just happens to be smart. A fox is very sly in that it tells you what you think that it's giving you good advice, but really it's giving you the worst advice possible. That's how a fox can be typified. So Rabbi Akiva was able to tell his chachamim that no, the fox is actually the worst of the worst. It represents the Samach Mem. It's the worst. You see a fox in the place of the place of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That means we're really in the Beis HaMikdash is really in bad shape, and therefore we know that the Nevuah of Zechariah is going to happen. And the Chassam Sefer then uses this as leverage to fight against reform. He says that you see these people, they're coming. They look like they're coming to save Yiddishkeit. They're saying, yeah, we want to keep our tradition. We want to keep who we are as a general nation. So we'll just, you know, forget about a bunch of halachas or, you know, assimilate to keep ourselves. And the Chassam Sefer says, no, this is exactly what the fox is. It's coming here, giving us some sort of facade that it's here to save the Jewish people, but this is actually what is going to cause our ultimate destruction. So the Chassam Sefer, he's explaining the Agadah. However, he's explaining the Agadah really in order to tell us to tell the people of that time, the 18th and 19th centuries, how it's such a powerful lesson for us now and how we should be understanding where salvation comes from and who we should be listening to. And then, of course, there is the explanation of the Rebbe. And the Rebbe's view on Torah is Torah Mileshon Hara, that everything in Torah, all of the Agadas are here as a lesson for us. And so here the Rebbe discusses the different details of the Agada, and we're going to go through in the Sicha that I'm going to discuss. It's not the standard Sicha in Likutei Sichas. It is a Sicha from a Farbringen in Tavshin Chaf Hei, 1965. The Rebbe asks no less than 20 questions on this story. And we're obviously not going to go through the questions, but the Rebbe shows us how what was going on in this conversation between the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva is much deeper than simply discussing the Chorban and how really they're talking about Avodas Hashem. So, story number one. They were going on their way. So the Rebbe says in Galus, going on your way really means to elevate the sparks. That's what our way in Galus is to do. It says in Gemara that the whole reason the Yidden are in Galus is to bring Gerim, to elevate the sparks of the Gerim, and then to elevate. And the Rebbe explains that this also means elevating the sparks from all of Klipa. And that's what Galus is all about. And that's why the Chachamim were heading to Rome before they were heading to Yerushalayim, because they were going to the place of Klipa in order to elevate it. Now, they get there, and they hear, they are almost there, and most of the three out of four Chachamim look at it and say, oh my gosh, this is such a hard job that we have to do. We have to go elevate sparks inside of Klipa? That doesn't sound fun. That's really, really difficult. And that's why they started laughing. It started crying. Rabbi Akiva started laughing because Rabbi Akiva himself was a ger, and he understood the importance of elevating sparks. He understood the importance of gerim, because if the concept of gerim didn't exist, where would he be? Well, he was the son of Yerim. So where would he be? So he knew how important this Avaida was, and that's why he was able to laugh at the outset of the Avaida of being Mivar Nitzotzim. Now, they have this different conversation. Why are you crying? Why are you laughing? So the Chachamim answered, why are we crying? Because not only are we not sitting and learning, which is what we want to do, not only are we not connected to Kedusha right now, but we're taught here, we're dealing with nitzotzos, with sparks that are so, so, so hidden. They're so hidden that we're talking about people here who serve Avodah Zarah. We know there are two types of klipa. There's klipas nega and shalosh klipas tmeis. Klipas nega is the Parv type of klipa, which we can elevate, which can be used to serve Hashem, while Shalosh Klipas HaTmeis cannot. The sparks are so, so hidden and covered over that we can't even use them for Kedusha. So they started crying and saying, we're talking here about people who serve Avodah Zarah, who are dealing with things that are Shalosh Klipas HaTmeis. We cannot even elevate them. So we're going there, we have a job to do, and it's too hard for us. That's why we're crying. We lost, those nitzotzos are lost. There's really nothing we can do. So Rabbi Akiva says, well, that's actually exactly the reason I'm laughing. He says, you're right. You're telling me how bad it is, and I know how bad it is. I know that it's so, so incredibly horrible that we have all these nitzotzos that are stuck so low in a way that we can't even elevate them. But with the fact that this low down situation is telling me is that Hashem is not working in a way that is b'medida v'hagbala, which means Hashem is not working in a way that's tit for tat. Because if we were working with natural order, you're right, there's no way we can elevate those sparks. They are so low down, they're so far away from us. You can't go to the lowest of the low and then use that place to elevate it to holiness. That doesn't make sense. Nevertheless, Hashem wants us to do that. That's showing us that the way that Hashem, the rules that Hashem is playing with in Galus, he's not playing by the rules of, you know, what's the expected. What he's doing is he's saying that what we need to do is we need to transcend Medidas V'Agbalas, that we are not going to be bound to the natural orders of things, and we will be able to accomplish Mashiach in a miraculous way. So I'm laughing because the unexpected harshness of it is telling me how we will be able to overcome all of these difficulties in a supernatural type of way. So again, specifically the reason why it seems so sad is the reason why I'm so incredibly happy. I know that we can do it and it doesn't have to make sense. It specifically doesn't have to make sense. We're working with a different set of rules. That's story number one. We can do it even though it looks so bad. It's specifically because it looks so bad that we know that we're going, that we have supernatural tools inside of us. Now, story number two, it says that they were Ayla Yerushalayim. They were going up to Yerushalayim. Ayla Yerushalayim, going up to Yerushalayim really refers to dealing with holy matters, dealing with Kedusha. So we're not talking about being Mevar and Netzotzes, dealing with Klipa anymore. Now we're talking about coming closer to Kedusha. They didn't cry by Har HaTzifim because this was the sad reality. This was nothing new for them, that they were, you know, that the Korban happened, they survived it. But when they saw the fox in Yerushalayim, they saw the fox on the Kodesh HaKodeshim, this was the reason for them to cry, because they basically said, Hashem didn't have to do that. Again, similar to what the Maharsha and the Maharal said, that the fox, it was like this extra bad thing. Hashem didn't have to do that to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Rebbe says that this really, there was more of a spiritual conversation going on over here, where they're talking about how we want to go up to Yerushalayim, we want to go up to a place of holiness. However, we see that the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the holiest place possible, has corruption inside of there. Now, inside of a person, the holiest place possible is your essence of godliness, is your neshama, is your connection with Hashem. Now, the Chachamim were saying, as long as everyone has that deep, unadulterated connection with Hashem, we're fine. Even if we're in Galus, that pintel yid will shine through, we'll be fine. But now that we see a fox in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, we see that even that people are using their highest powers for Klipa, they're using their Chachma and all of their different capabilities, they're using that all for Klipa, there is no way that we can ever bring Mashiach. There's no one to bring back. Everyone's essence of Kedusha, the Kodesh HaKodeshim, has a fox inside of it. And there's no point. There's no point to try and bring people closer, because the Kodesh HaKodeshim is ruined. We're so far. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, you're totally missing the point. That this is exactly why I'm laughing. If we were talking about a galus where a person didn't feel that his essential connection to Hashem, his Kodesh HaKodeshim, is being threatened, then there's not necessarily would we feel like this crazy need to be connected to Hashem. And the Alter Rebbe really discusses this in Tanya, in Prakim Yurches and Yotes, when he talks about the Avim Sutaris. And the Rebbe discusses this in the Mimer of the Ata Tetzava, where he says that as long as someone feels like they're still connected with Hashem, whatever, it's okay if I do this Avera or I don't do that mitzvah, it's fine, I'm still connected to Hashem. But when a person feels like his essential connection to Hashem is in jeopardy, then that person will have Mesiras Nefesh. And that's why throughout history, when people who not necessarily were so incredibly from, they were Meister Nefesh and had and gave up their lives instead of giving up their Yiddishkeit, because they felt that if I throw that Sefer Torah into the fire, or if I do whatever massive avera, then I won't be Jewish anymore. My Nekudas Hayadas, my essential connection to Hashem, will be ruined. So Rabbi Akiva says, no, it's so amazing that people feel that their connection to Hashem is being ruined, because that will make them actually want to come closer to Hashem, because there is no way, and the Rebbe discusses this, how a Yid does not want to and cannot really disconnect themselves from Hashem. We can do it when we don't feel like we're being disconnected, but when we feel like we're being disconnected, that's when we really turn around and come closer to Hashem. And that's really what these two psukim of Ori and Zechariah are discussing, that the lower the Yerida, the greater the Aliyah. The more internal the gullus is, the more we're going to want and connect to Hashem. So, as we see from all these different interpretations on this Agada, this Agada, very simply, is discussing a conversation between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, and talking about how Geula could come in the place of this void. The Rebbe takes this idea and really discusses how this is obviously talking about Mashiach, and it's talking about the personal Mashiach inside of all of us, in terms of being mevarer the netzotzos, in terms of revealing the kedusha inside of the klipa, and then bringing ourselves out of the hold of klipa and connecting to Hashem.
Wow, Mishki, that is really beautiful. So I guess the message of the first story is, when you've reached rock bottom and it seems like, how am I ever going to get out of this place? The fact that you're in a place that seems so impossible to get out of, the fact that you've reached rock bottom, tells you that it's not going to be my own natural capabilities that are going to take me out of here. It's not going to be a rational process. It's not going to be a normal process. There's going to have to be something beyond me that's going to guide this process. And the fact that Hashem designed it this way means that Hashem has some sort of supernatural way of making sure that this is going to be successful. So as long as I'm still looking at this situation as something that is going to follow a natural path, and there's going to be a natural way for me to pull myself out of this really dark situation, it's going to seem impossible. But once I'm able to sort of leave that mind frame and say, no, this is actually the fact that we've fallen so low, right? The fact that I'm facing darkness that is so evil, right? That seems like, how could this possibly even exist? It's a signal to me that this is not something that's going to be overcome just through natural means, but it's going to be overcome through a totally different approach that's beyond just the natural process. That's something that's guided by Hashem. So that's a really powerful message. And I think also the second story, this whole notion of that evil inside of ourselves, right? Not just the darkness that we face external to us, but also that evil inside of ourselves, that voice that seems like even the most fundamental relationship with Hashem, right? The most fundamental spark of faith within the Jew, right? When you see that being threatened, it's scary, right? It's alarming. It's like, how can we feel like there's this resistance or this temptation to do things that are so contrary to our identity as Jews? And likewise, when we see it in other people, right? Seeing that can be very jarring and very alarming, right? It's like, it seems like there's no hope, right? If we're willing to sacrifice even the most fundamental parts of who we are, right? If we're willing to challenge, right, that core Jewish identity, that then what else do we have? And I think this idea that, no, the fact that there's a threat to this core of who I am, the fact that I can even have like a temptation or a desire to do something that's totally foreign, totally opposite to what my core identity as a Jew is, that's exactly what is so powerful about about my decision to stay committed to my Judaism, right? It's like, it's only when that part of me is threatened that I'm able to see its full power, its full strength. And I could really see what it means to have that core identity as a Jew, that despite the fact that it's being threatened, I'm still able to stay strong. And I think in general, right, we have this fear, right? Anytime we see things that might be threatening, threatening our commitment or threatening our purity, our innocence, it could be scary to us, right? It could be scary to see it in other people, and it could be scary to see it in ourselves. And this idea that, no, that's not scary. That's not something to be afraid of. It's not something to be, it's not a reason to feel disillusioned. It's part of the design of the Jew that when we have that threat, when we have that something which is saying, threatening this identity, this core identity of who we are, that's really what signals to us how powerful and how strong it is, and it brings out that power and that strength. So, wow, two really powerful messages that we can take away from the story. And again, it's not just sort of the global redemption, the global geula that the story is talking about, but it's really talking about the personal redemption that we each experience within ourselves. How can we find within the darkest part of ourselves, the darkest activities, the darkest matters that we can be evolved in, how can we find within that a spark of where this is driving us to what real geula, real redemption is really about?
So us being in this time, which is the time of Tisha B'Av, the time of the ultimate low of the Jewish nation, we can use this Agada specifically as no matter how low we are, it's not just that no matter how low we are, we can go high, but it's specifically the fact that we are so low that is the indication of how high we can become and how wonderful the times of Mashiach really will be.